Hello, welcome to the photo show. Yes, we are here to discuss all the photo news that's gone on, all the gear, all the news, and some of your questions. Excuse that burp, that couldn't have come out 2 seconds earlier, could it? No, before we started, but never mind, I'll edit. Maybe. We're here to discuss all of that stuff, and thank you very much to those people who've taken the time to write in with a question. If you've got a question, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and we will deal with it. Right. First one then, straight away, we're into the news. First story then is Instagram. Yes, there's a lawyer who's actually decided to sit down and try and explain to people what they're actually doing with their photos when they stick them on Instagram. And I read to you the explanation. Now, I've always said to you, don't put stuff online, because once you put it online, it's gone. It's effectively no longer yours, especially things like Instagram and Flickr and that kind of stuff. So here is the Instagram licensing section. Okay, Instagram does not claim ownership of any content that you post on or through the service. Instead, you hereby grant to Instagram a non-exclusive, fully paid and royalty-free, transferable, sub-licensable, worldwide license to use the content that you post on or through the service, subject to the service's privacy policy available here, and it's a web address, including but not limited to sections 3, sharing of information, 4, how we store your information, and 5, your choices about information. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, this guy's broken it down, and effectively, what it means is that they'll do what the hell they like with your photo, but it still remains your copyright. So one of the things that he makes clear is Instagram does not claim ownership of any content that you post through this service. That's the bit right at the start. So you still own your photo. The copyright control is yours. But technically speaking, if Instagram was to not put in all of the other stuff that we're about to read out, they wouldn't be able to show it on their website. And that's no point, because that's the whole purpose of it. So they have to have a license to reproduce it. And you have to give them that license. Otherwise, you can't use the surface. And that's perfectly okay. That's not a duress kind of agreement, if you like. Instead, you hereby grant to Instagram a non-exclusive. So non-exclusive means that they get to use your photo, but you can still use your photo as well. So if you want to sell that image, it's fine. You can sell that image and you won't have a problem with Instagram, and Instagram won't have a problem with you. It's fully paid. This means that Instagram will not charge, you will not be able to charge Instagram for the use of the photo. They've already paid you by the service that they provide. You've got to have offer and acceptance. You're making the offer of the of that, and the acceptance is from them, and the consideration is the fact that you get the free service and they get the use of that image. Royalty free, so that means that they don't have to pay you anything in the future. So if you do image licensing through a stock image website, then you'll use a licensed image if you want to have a fee per insertion. If it's royalty free, then all the user has to do is buy it, and then they can use it in perpetuity. Be careful, because if they buy it, then that's it at that point. You've lost control of it. They can't resell it. That's not allowed, but they can use it as much as they want. And if it's a stock image website house that's used it, then they can use it in any of the future publications that they've got. It's transferable. Oh, dear. So that's the bit where I've just said they can't sell it on, but this one says they can give it away. I'm awfully sorry. Sub-licensable, which means that they can then charge other parties to use it, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's not particularly good either. And a worldwide license means they can do that globally. There we go. They can't sell it to the Martians to use, however. No. That's good news, isn't it? Magic Man's on the way home, off to work at 4:30. Oh, damn. Never mind. And Paul Holmes is in there in Norfolk. Wow. Hello, Paul. How you doing, mate? See you later. VSCO has got its new application out, a new updates application rather. Now, if you're into your photography on iOS or Android, then you'll know about VSCO. They're a really good firm that provide photo apps for the two platforms. One thing that they've done this week, though, is that they've given you full RAW support for any images that you've got on your phone. You can edit those raw photos, you can do the highlight changes, you can recover, you can get your HD, pseudo HDR looking type effects on it. And also, if you've imported any phones to your iOS device or Android device and then they're in a DSLR, CR2 format, or the NEF format, or that kind of stuff for other platforms, then VSCO will also allow you to edit those and output them as well, as which is really kind of cool. It's a free program that you can get on the iTunes store. There's a link in the show notes if you want to get it. And also there is a limited edition set of effects that you can buy as well, which is $8.99 for an in-app purchase, which is nothing at all really considering how much they're giving you. But you get full raw support. Well done. Next thing then. Now, do you remember last week I said to you, a lot of the time I shoot in manual anyway when I'm out on site. And you're all going to go, oh, bloody hell, yeah, but we're not pros, we can't shoot in manual, so just switch off from it. You don't have to. There's a new application out there. It's a web app that you can have a use. This has been developed by Simon Roberts. He's a London-based animator and designer, and he's created a simple tool, and it really is simple, for anyone who wants to look at it, that shows you what the impact of the light is on an image, the aperture is, the shutter is, and the ISO capture is, and what the final image or the final exposure that you're going to see is going to look like. So he's got a very simple picture of day or night is depicted by a blacker image or a whiter image on the screen. He's also taken a helicopter flying over a cityscape, and judging by the changes in what you're seeing in the light, the aperture, the shutter, the sensor, and the exposure at the bottom, then you will see what that will do to your image in real time. So if you set it at night, as it shows here, with an aperture of 5.6 and shoot at a 60th of a second with an ISO speed of 1600, you're going to get a fairly grainy and fairly blurred image, because a 60th of a second is nowhere near good enough to capture rotor speeds, and 1600 is a very quick level for the capture sensitivity, so it's going to increase the grain that there is on the capture quality. Let's say you want to change that then, and you go to ISO 6400. You can see on the center diagram that it's a lot more grainy. You're up to half a second on exposure, and f-stop 1.4. That means, okay, you've managed to balance things an awful lot better, but the cityscape in the distance is now completely out of use. There is an utter and total blur at half a second. The chances are there's going to be a load of camera shake as well as, so that's why it's all blurred on there. And at 6400 ISO, you have got a massive amount of grain on there. And then there's daytime stuff as well that shows you how to start slowing down the rotors and getting more and more in focus. So f8 gives you, probably at that distance, it'll probably give you a hyperfocal length, so you'll actually have everything completely in focus. I wouldn't agree necessarily with the picture that you put there. And also then there's a summary about how all of those affected, and thinking about the balance of ISO to aperture to shutter priority, and the effect that it has upon it. Great, well done, thank you Simon. Really clever set of features there for people to try with, and it should help get more of you into shooting in manual. Ferris and Margaret Romare are a couple who are celebrating their 70th wedding anniversary. Congratulations, Ferris and Margaret. Incredibly good. But one of the things that they didn't get when they did their wedding was any photos. They've got photos of them together as sweethearts. They shot up here. There we go. And soon after they got married. But they didn't get any photographs on the day. So for their 70th wedding anniversary, they used a photographer called Lara Carter, and she took pictures for them all. Ferris is 90 and Margaret is 89, and these are the pictures that were taken. And you can clearly see that they're really happy with each other, they're having a good time. There's a big picture here, says Forever in Love on it. They're a nice little couple. He even got a snug look, not bad. And they had pictures of them when they were got married, and what they looked like at the time. And clear to say, they don't look like it now. But it's a lovely story. It is. Young love, says Bronwyn in the chat room. Well done. Magic Man's also said he's had a go with the application that I just talked about, and he said he loves it. So, yeah, very good. Well done, Ferris and Margaret, and happy 70th wedding anniversary. Ian has put something in the document here. Thanks to Ian. If you don't know who Ian Lewis is, he's a phenomenal landscape photographer who lives down in Cornwall. And without Ian, I would not be doing the photo show again, because it's a lot of work. And it's shown in the last couple of weeks, really. It's really ping-pong well, where he's had a ton of time to do. So he's got a few in at the start. Then he hasn't had any, and I've done a couple. And now I've done a lot in this one, and then he's finished it off for me. So thanks to Ian, because I wouldn't be able to do the photo shoot again without him kind of spurring and helping me on with it. How good's the iPhone? Now, you're all saying, well, yeah, but the iPhone's great. It takes good pictures. It takes great video. Absolutely. I couldn't disagree. But, you know, how does it hold up against a pro model camera? Well, this chap, Parker Wolbeck, he's from a company called Full Time Filmmaker. He is a full-time filmmaker. Oh, read the doc before you start. And he has decided to test the iPhone 7 against his Red Weapon. Now, that's not a porn film, and it's not a euphemism for something else. Red make extremely high-end cameras that capture up to 6K, and probably may go beyond now. But it's a very expensive camera. It's around $50,000 worth of camera. So here we go, $600 smartphone versus £50,000 or £50,000, $50,000 Red Weapon. How did it hold up? Well, the video that he's put in is kind of complimentary. He says it does very, very well. You can look at the pictures that he's taken that actually it's in a very, very well-lit environment. It does pretty well. But this bit here was clearly at a sunset, and it's not bad. It's not bad at all. I defied you to try and figure out which one's which in those two images, because his point was, yeah, okay, well, if you shoot with a 50K camera, you'll know that it's going to be okay. It's going to be really good. And if you shoot with the iPhone, if you get the conditions right, yes, it's going to be okay. But he said that when you started to shrink stuff down and compress it so that it's on Facebook or on YouTube, you really can't tell that much difference. I mean, I would suggest that the one at the top clearly has got an awful lot more sharpening in it than the one on the bottom. And that may lead you to think, but I mean, who knows? Who knows? It's a good little film, and he's not trying to start a debate about the iPhone taking over from Red cameras. It's nothing to do with that. He's genuinely saying, you know, this is what you'll like, and if you compress, then you can get really usable results. I've shot video using my iPhone 6 on site and used it in commercial films. It's not a problem. Probably until about 2 years ago, all of my films were shown on data projectors, so you were getting a really low resolution when they were shown. So I didn't worry about the resolution I shot in. 1080 was fine. Now I'm starting to get them shown on TV screens an awful lot, and that does make a bit of a difference to it. And there's a few of those TVs now cropping up in corporations that are 4K as well. So I'm going to have to think about maybe 4K is the way to go forwards. But when I said it wasn't 2 years ago, I did mean at the time, and it wasn't, but now it might well be. What is this? This is the cover of Sports Illustrated for December. There we go. And it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson in some kind of setting with loads and loads of lights, and it's a great picture. What you're not aware of is that this is the first cover shot ever on a large magazine that was shot using only a cell phone. Yeah, it was shot with a Motorola. Michael Brecht has done it. He's been asked to shoot an A-list celebrity using a cell phone. He chose the Moto Z. But it also had a Hasselblad True Zoom Moto Mod attachment onto it, which is about $300 worth of attachment. Hasselblad have probably had virtually nothing to do with it other than licensing their name to it. And that's possibly helped in terms of triggering light and that kind of stuff. He's also shot some pictures with his 5DS Mark II, just to make sure he got something. But that is shot on a cell phone. And there's the cell phone with Dwayne in the frame. And he shot some others there. And actually, the results are very good. What does this show you? Again, does this say that the cell phone is going to take over from the DSLR? No. What it's saying is, if you've got $100,000 worth of lighting, you too can create great pictures. Photography is all about the lighting. The more lighting you have, the better off you'll be. That doesn't mean you have to bathe the subject. You need directional lighting, but if you get very good quality lighting, then you will get great results. It always helps if you've got good looking people as well. Don't forget that. Last story in the news, Flickr has released all of its data for 2016 and its top 10 pictures. So here we go, in reverse order, the top 10 pictures on Flickr. This is where I need the Alan Freeman music, isn't it? That would have been good. I love the fact that 1080 is now low res, says Bronwyn. Oh yeah. His Red Weapon, Red Weapon is totally a porn movie name, most definitely. Here we go, at 10, there's this picture of some lights in the sky and some really ominous clouds, actually. I do like that one, that's not bad at all. At 9, there's the sunlight coming through the trees with moss covered on the north side. Yeah, that's good. At 8, it's a black and white of the inside of a big house somewhere. Jolly good. Versailles, I would have suggested, perhaps. At numbers, the next one along, 8, 10, 9, 8, 7, it's two swans making a heart shape and being desperately in love on a frozen lake. Bit of post-processing in that one, though. At 6, it's lightning striking the ocean, which is beautiful. At 5, it's, I guess that's Bali or somewhere like that, or Mauritius or something, with a fiery sunset and a big long deck walk going out. At 4, it's the Milky Way with some of those windmill things that you get in Western movies and a dead tree. And at number 3, it's a windy road. And there's something gone on in post there because that's too light in the dotted lines. But it's a windy road through some trees in the sunset. And then the next one is a tree. That's a really weird tree growing up in the middle of a lake. I don't know how that works, but it clearly is true. So it was actually a nice shot. I've compressed all of these to 1080, so ratios wise. Just shows you, if you stick your stuff online, you lose all control of it because some idiot comes along and squashes it to whatever damn ratio they choose. Yes. And the last one, the winner of all, was a pier that's fallen to pieces with a canoe or a kayak or a canoe sat out in the middle of the river, and it's pretty still, and there's a fiery sun something, whether it's rise or set, I don't know. There we go. So that is Flickr's top 10 photos that were posted to it this year. What's quite interesting is they also put the stats up. What were they all shot on? Well, interestingly, and I thought that iPhone 7 would be in there by now because they've had a good couple of months at it, but no. iPhone 7 doesn't penetrate the top 10 list of cameras. 5D Mark III, 5D Mark II are the only two DSLRs that are in there. All the rest are iPhones, 4S through to 6S. Blimey. But they've done a plus separation, so there we go. Interesting list. Top hashtags that we use, or top keywording, nature, sunset, water, sky, landscape. Well, there's an awful lot of those things there in that first lot. Blue, red, beach, portrait, and night. Well done. Thanks, Flickr. It's made a difference to my day. Here we go then. It's time for the gear. Do you like your monitors? I do. I love these two monitors. These are the best two things I've ever bought, no question. I really, really enjoy them. Well, BenQ are trying to get another £1,000 out of my pocket because they've released the SW320 in 4K. It's Adobe RGB screen color. It's 3840x2160 resolution. 10-bit IPS panel that supports 100% sRGB and 99% Adobe RGB. Built-in SD card reader, that's going to be useful if you've just got yourself one of the brand new MacBook Pros and that's gone, unlike the MacBook Pro, yeah. Support for HDR10, features three different black and white presets. Also, stand features hotkey puck to switch between RGB, Adobe RGB, black and white, and programmable own custom settings. It's not out there yet. It's due in January, so next month, 2017. And it also has this hood, which is squishy squashy, so that you can use it on landscape or portrait, which I think is really, really brilliant to get rid of any unwanted effects or unwanted views. It's brilliant. I really like it. It's a lovely, lovely monitor. It looks stunning. And I love the versatility of it as well, being able to do the old portrait versus landscape thing. Price, £1,000, $1,000. So it's on the pricier end of it. But at 4K, it's well worth it. The monitors that I've got here in front of me are not 4K. So good money. Connections. I didn't look at connections, but there's definitely HDMI in there and there's definitely DisplayPort because I saw that on the picture. This is a Casio ultra low light camera. Now then, I don't know what I think about this one. This is aimed at people who go into do caving and potholing, people who dive regularly, or people who go camping or want to capture wildlife. It is super, ooper duper ultra low light. So this thing has got 1.9 megapixel capture, so that's a really small sensor. I'm guessing that's because you want to put this up for an awful long time, so therefore the power drain on such a small sensor is really, really low. It's got a fixed 20 millimeter lens. It will go up to 51,200 ISO. But I think the pictures you're going to get out of it are going to be pretty crap. And pretty grainy. I think you're going to put this up, leave it up, and hopefully see what you get. There's a picture here of a lion. I'm guessing that the thing is aimed at people who want a great picture that it's on a safari where they don't have to leave themselves out in a tent and run the risk of getting eaten. I couldn't get a price on it. There was no price listed on it. It's only available in Asia at the moment, and it's got a detachable screen, so there's like a wireless connection from it as well, perhaps, and I'm a bit lost what they're trying to do with it, I have to say. But would I buy one? No. Hell no. I wouldn't. I've got no function for this whatsoever, so it's interesting. Maybe someone's going to rave about it in a year and I'm talking out my arse. Meyer Optic Gorlitz have created a new lens. This is for Sony E-mount, so that pricked my ears up straight away because I'm always looking for Sony lenses. There's no autofocus on this, however, it is a manual focus lens. It works on full frame or on APS-C sensor stuff that's got the E-mount system. 50mm fixed, it's got an aperture of 0.95, so that gets very, very, very depthy to f22. 10 elements in 7 groups. It's a 15-blade aperture with anti-reflective coating. The minimum focal distance, though, which surprised me here, is 50 centimetres. I thought they might have to get a bit closer than that. And it's well over half a kilo at 680 grams. It's only manual focus. And it's available on the 1st of January for £3,225. I'm sure there's someone out there who is going to absolutely adore this lens, but it won't be me. No. It does look well made, and it's got that German engineering-y type look to it, most definitely. It is nice, but have you used Affinity? Now, I had a go with Affinity, and it says that it's the competition, if you like, for Photoshop. And it is very versatile and it's very fully featured and there's loads of stuff you can do with it. But I never thought it would. Version 1.5 has just been released now for Windows. Now, if you've got your Mac, don't worry, you can still get it for Mac. That's not a problem. But the feature set is the same, but this is the version for Windows that's been released. It says it's $40, but I noticed today there is a sale that it's down to $29 at the moment if you want to go and buy it. It does full batch processing from large folders. It's got HDR merging to produce a deep unbound 32-bit image, unquote. Full tone mapping workspace, new focus stacks, new editing system for 360-degree photos. That's going to be pretty useful. Direct PSD writeback, so that means you can open all your PSD files and still save them again. 32-bit editing. Automatic lens correction using camera lens profiles and loads of other stuff. I had a go with it. I thought it was great. But there was no way I was giving up Photoshop in order to use it. And I think that's true of an awful lot of people when they use this kind of stuff. But here we go. It's at the moment you're getting it for $29, whereas you're not getting it from Photoshop at £15 a month. It was great. When I had a go, I liked it. It was featured full set, but it's not something to pull me away from Photoshop, not at all. There we go. That's all the gear. So we've done the news, we've done the gear. The only thing left is your questions. So here we go, your questions. Question one is from Martin. Okay, when would you consider using a polarizing filter and which type, straight or circular? That would be linear or circular. And does the effect vary on a zoom lens? So what I'm going to do to you is read out a physics definition of what polarization is. Restrict the vibrations of a transverse wave, especially light, wholly or partially to one direction. That's polarization. So when light bounces off something, it polarizes by the process of it changes direction and restricts the vibration of that light. And that's what gives us the ability to see colors and that kind of stuff. If it's a reflective surface, then it's reflecting the light actually that comes off it without changing the light quantity or the light frequencies. All a polarizer does is it adds polarization to that light that is unpolarized. So it is attenuating the light frequency to bring it back in line with all the others. So if you point it at a window, the light that's reflected off that window is unpolarized light. The polarizer puts polarization on it, therefore it then allows it to see through the window because it sees everything else that is polarized. I think I've said that right. It's an attenuation of light, plain and simple as that. It attenuates one frequency of light that's coming in, or one type of light that's coming into your lens. A linear polarizer then. Linear polarizers, in inverted commas, don't work with digital cameras, but they do. So if you're willing to do manual focus, then you'll probably be fine. Sometimes they will actually not work with them, though, because they will cause a problem with your low-pass filter when it passes the information through to the sensor, so you'll get some corruptions or artifacts on it. Technically you shouldn't use them, though. You can physically, but don't. Use a circular polarizer always. Does it vary the effect on a zoom lens? No, but because of the fact you're attenuating light, you're going to probably lose three stops of exposure on this, so your vignetting is going to get more heavy with the zoom lens or something like that, perhaps. But it doesn't affect the frequency of the light, or it doesn't affect the attenuation of the light, because that's it. It just is. It's fine. It'll all be concurrent with each other. When do you use it? You do it really more when you want to start balancing. So you can get the sky is going to blow out, so you need to just back it off a little bit. You should use it at 90 degrees to the sun, so that you're never actually straight into the sun or straight away from the sun. Ian's put a good point here. He said, remember that you're also stopping the light down. So if you're using it handheld, you may get to the state where lens shake may become an issue as well. So think about that. But you are reducing the amount of light that goes in, because the process is about light attenuation, plain and simple. That's my understanding of it anyway. And if it's not the right thing, I don't care. Question two is from Barbara in Manchester. Thank you, Barbara. Ewan, thanks for returning with the photo show. I've got a question. You talk about stops of light. I just have, Barbara. What is a stop of light? Oh, bloody hell. Tough questions this week. Physically, if you go to stops of aperture, then what you would be talking about is when you had a lens that would rotate, it would actually go into a V. There would be a sprung-loaded thing, button, that as you rotated the ring for controlling the blades for aperture, it would actually physically drop into a V cut out, and that would stop the lens from moving. You'd have to press a button. Well, I used to have an old lens where you pressed a button to lift the thing up and then move it round, otherwise it would constantly stop in the thing. So basically with lenses, when you rotate and you go from f1.4 to f2.0, to 2.0 to 2.8, 2.8 to 4, 4 to 5, 6, those are one stops of aperture. Okay, plain and simple. If you're talking about stops with ISO, it's a bit different, because you'd be going, oh, well, it's just the next increment up on the ISO on my camera. No, it's not. So with ISO, technically speaking, and I've had this conversation with Ian briefly this afternoon, a stop is not just the next step up. A stop is doubling or halving of the value that you have. So if you go from 100 ISO to 200 ISO, that is a stop. If you go from 400 ISO to 640 ISO before you go to 800 ISO on a digital camera, because your digital camera allows you that variance to have 640 ISO, that's fine, but that is not a stop. 400 to 800 is a stop. 400 to 640 is not. And then 800 to 1600 is a stop. 1600 to 3200 is a stop. So it's doubling or halving, technically. Yeah. It's the most confusing thing, because people talk about stops, and I know what I mean by a stop, but it depends what you're stopping, and it's easy to not understand, Barbara. I hope that's helped. But generally speaking, with aperture, that's the easiest one to understand, because it is at the point that the lens would have clicked round to the next stop. Okay. If you've got a question, then you can send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and I will attempt to bumble through an answer that makes me look like I'm vaguely competent. Failing that, I'll make it up. Right, that's it. That's the photo show. Done and dusted. I think that's a new record, isn't it? Probably done less than an hour there. Wow. If you've got any stories as well, you can send them through to us and we'll put them on. And there we go. I need reviews. I've had no reviews for the photo show. Please, please, please stick us some reviews in to get us back up in iTunes. Even if you go back and amend your old review just to make it sound like it's new and vibrant and a happening show. That would be cool. We're not having any main shows next week. I think we might be going for a photo show, but I think we're going to push all the Christmas shows to the 20th, because I've got work next week. So more than likely there'll be a photo show again on the 20th, and we'll try and, as much as we can, we'll try and keep it on with all the other show days as well as. So keep your ears peeled. Subscribe to the calendar. If you go to britishtechnetwork.com/live, scroll down to the bottom, you can subscribe to the BTN calendar, and whenever I say there's going to be a show, I'll change that calendar, and I'm actually pretty good at that. I'm pretty shit at other stuff, but I do actually change the calendar. I'll update that, and it'll pop up in your calendar on your iCal or something like that. Have a great weekend, and enjoy all the festivities running into Christmas. We'll see you on the 20th, and then it'll be time for our Christmas too.